Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. If it's Thursday, it's a throwdown. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend, Dr. Greg Roscoe, out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, playing producer and co-host with him tonight again. 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 minutes goes by quick. We understand. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports podcast platforms where you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me, as I lay down the red carpet, put the podium in place, hand off the mic, the threes. Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And boy, this is going to be a great topic in cold Pittsburgh tonight, and the Steelers are playing out there tonight as well.
That's exactly right. Mark, thank you very much for the introduction. Thank you for producing and co-hosting this program, Mark. I'm doing well. We have a great topic tonight. Our listeners can get a hold of me, gjrmd308@outlook.com. And, Mark, they have been getting a hold of me. Our topic tonight, you know, you have topics that people like, they want to know about, they want to hear about. And, you know, I get little emails periodically about sleep apnea, about snoring, also about a device that's new on the market called the Inspire. And I've been, you know, kind of saving the emails. And, you know, we put them in little buckets to see what topics would be of interest to our listeners. And this one, you know, again, seems to be a great one. You know, we're finishing the year at our 7 o'clock slot here on Thursday. And then as Mark has let everybody know, we're going to reconvene in January at about 8:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, Mark, it's going to be an early Saturday on that West Coast, but thank you for allotting that time to us.
You're welcome. Anything for you, my brother. I'm glad this show is going good, and we're picking up steam with it. The listeners are starting to get the emails out to you. They're getting them all over the place, and they're really buying into the show. It's almost like a grassroots marketing campaign with this show.
Well, you really helped to set it up, get the ball rolling. And, you know, we've had excellent guests, you know, good topics. And I think people are responding to, you know, what's going on. And it's also been fun. And it's really an enjoyable event for me and at this point in my career professionally. So let's go on. You know, what we want to do is let's talk a little bit about sleep disorders. All right, sleep disorders. And, you know, there's some vocabulary people may be hearing, maybe at their doctors, on TV, you know, on other podcasts. But, you know, there's some words that we need to kind of look into. You know, one word is insomnia. Another word is sleep apnea. Another word is narcolepsy. You know, we can follow along with restless leg syndrome. So these are some of the words that are used that kind of describe abnormal sleep. Another one is REM, sleep behavior disorder. So long story short, what does all this mean? Well, you know, when we talk about sleep and sleep disorders, we're talking about our bodies breathing that tends to be repeatedly stopped and started. I'll say that again. It has to do with our body's breathing while we're sleeping, repeatedly stopping and starting. Now, we'll talk about symptoms. You know, when we talk about this sleep disorder, and in particular, sleep apnea, there's two types. The most common type is something called obstructive sleep apnea. There is another type of sleep apnea, a little far rarer overall, which is called central sleep apnea. So you have the two types. You have obstructive, and then you have central. Obstructive has to do with the muscles of the throat and soft palate collapsing in the airway and blocking the flow of air into the lungs. Again, it's a matter of soft tissue in the throat and soft palate obstructing the flow of air into the lungs. The other type of apnea called central has to do with the brain not giving our body proper signals to help control our breathing in a synchronized fashion. And that's kind of rare, but indeed it is out there. And when we talk about obstructive sleep apnea, we're talking about tissues in the back of the throat called the soft palate and the area of the tongue, where we have the tonsils, and as we know, there are two sets of tonsils. Tonsils on the side of the throat, which typically are the ones that can get very large, and those are the ones that we typically talk about taking out. There's also another set of tonsils at the back of the tongue. They're called lingual tonsils. So our apnea, our sleep disorder that we want to talk about tonight, has to do with this soft tissue collapse. And, you know, Mark, a lot of people come in to see me for this, especially with the advent of the new device called Inspire, which is something kind of a fancy name, is hypoglossal nerve implant. Now, a lot of people use something called CPAP. And, you know, the numbers are staggering. The number of people that have a sleep disorder that use CPAP, it's in the millions. And, you know, having said that, I don't think it makes a big difference if it's 10 million or 20 million or 30 million. It's a problem. And these people that use the CPAP typically find it very uncomfortable, very difficult to manage, but also very, very necessary. So, Mark, you know, starting the discussion now about sleep disorders with particularly sleep apnea, we're going to get into this a little bit where we talk about, you know, sleep apnea, obstructive sleep disorder being the most common sleep disorder that we know about. And it really hits a certain demographic population that typically is older men. It can also, and it does, hit females and can hit children. You know, the other thing is, as we all get a little bit older, we get it, our females get into menopause, things start to change, and it becomes a problem. You know, with regards to numbers, the numbers are staggering. And, you know, some of the studies that we've looked at, the prevalence of sleep apnea in North America varies between 25% and 30% of males. Probably about 10% to 12% of females. So the numbers, Mark, as you can imagine, are very, very large. And some of the factors that contribute to this obstruction are, as we noted, older age. You know, as we all age a little bit, our tissues tend to get a little floppier, less firm, and they can obstruct a lot easier. And usually we see a lot of apnea in our 60s and 70s. You know, the other issue are males, and males are 2 to 3 times more common to have apnea than females. Another factor that's of issue is obesity. You know, putting on a lot of weight leads, again, to apnea. And so that's kind of the groundwork, Mark, that we're looking at. You know, email just came up here. How do I know if I have obstructive sleep apnea? Well, you know, there's some questions, Mark, that we have that we use. There's a questionnaire that we use for our patients. And let me kind of get into the questions that our listeners can start to think about. In particular, you know, let's start with one of the most important questions that we see. Do I snore? Snoring is definitely very important in this process. So it is important if you know, do you snore? And, you know, again, well, how serious is it? Is it slightly loud? Is it louder than talking? Is it something that's very loud and can be heard in the adjacent rooms of your home? How often, you know, are you snoring? Do you snore every time you lay down? Is it 3 to 4 times a week? You know, is it occasional that you do snore? Again, just some ideas to quantify the difficulty. And, you know, also, when you do snore, are you bothering other people? Could it be your significant other? Could it be the children in the next room? How serious is this snoring? You know, going on, another question to ask, has anybody noticed that you quit breathing while you're sleeping? You know, is a significant other there that maybe sleeps in the same bed, if at all possible, due to the loud noise, that they notice you obstructing or having difficulty breathing while you're sleeping? And, you know, we talk about the elbow test. Are you getting the elbow while you're trying to sleep? And, you know, another aspect of this is, how often do you feel tired, fatigued after you sleep? Do you wake up every day in the morning and just feel tired? Is it occasional, or is it almost always you wake up tired and fatigued? You know, when you are up and you're feeling tired, is that something that, again, you feel like you want to go to bed again because you are so tired? And, you know, again, we're getting into knowing a little bit about what your habits are. Another question you need to ask yourself, do you nod off or fall asleep while you're driving your vehicle? Again, very important. And again, what's the frequency? We're getting into some other questions here that actually have to do with a sleep apnea situation, and that's high blood pressure. You know, do you have high blood pressure? Sometimes because of apnea, we do see people having high blood pressure. And again, I have a few more questions, and you may be getting some questions there also, Mark, coming in.
Yep.
There's something called BMI. BMI is body mass index. And, you know, it's a ratio of our height to our weight. And overall, the number needs to be typically to be healthy in the 30s, 30, 31, 32. You know, and again, we get into, you know, the higher 30s. That's definitely a problem with this body mass index. That means we're carrying a little bit too weight. You know, are we older than 50? We know that, you know, for the most part, this occurs in our 60s and 70s, you know, in our male population. Another very interesting factor here is neck size. All right, and again, you measure this, you know, around your Adam's apple area all the way around. And, you know, is the shirt collar greater than 15 to 16 inches? Very important in a large-necked man. The other big question, are you male or female? Usually males are more prone to sleep apnea. So those are some of the starting factors, Mark, you know, that we talk about in starting to think about sleep apnea. I can go on a little bit longer here, Mark, talking about, you know, what are the dangers of sleep apnea? You know, why is it something we talk about? Why is it something that there's been such a tremendous amount of research on? Because it does cause problems. And, you know, the list is a serious list. Sleep apnea, this apnea stopping breathing at night, does lead to high blood pressure. It can lead to strokes. it can affect our heart and damage the heart muscle. Also, some people have daytime headaches because they just haven't oxygenated their brain well. This can lead to diabetes. It also can lead to depression or cerebral irritability. Those are just kind of, you know, touching the surface of sleep apnea and what it leads to overall. So, Mark, do you have some questions for me that we might be able to start on?
Yeah, we got Dale coming in from Danville, California, and he basically says he was treated for sleep apnea. His doctor told him to sleep on your side or stomach rather than on your back. But he noticed he got the, you know, it was continuing even when he slept on his side. What is the right way of doing it? Coming in from Danville, out there in California.
Wow. And,
that's a great question.
Great question. And, you know, there's a lot of the different advice out there that, you know, different type specialties talk about, Mark. And, you know, with regard to this sleep apnea, you know, over the several years now, 15 to 20 years, there's been a variety of different therapies. Yes, laying on your side. However, you know, laying on your side, laying on your belly, sometimes you don't have a lot of control of that, you know, at night when you're sleeping. And it may not resolve the problem. And if you do flip over on your back or your other side, you still may obstruct. So it is something I think we need a little more therapeutic intervention here. And, you know, as far as what is out there and what some of the doctors know about, there are oral appliances. You know, there's a gadget you can put in your mouth that goes back, stays on your teeth, but it's a little gadget that lays in the back of the throat, and it controls the tongue from obstructing in the back of the throat. I've seen it. I've touched it. I really don't want to put that in my mouth. I sure as heck don't want to go to sleep with it. But it is, you know, a device that, again, may have some success in some patients. You know, and another of device, and again, you know, they're called the PAPs, P-A-P, positive airway pressure. All right, and you've heard of CPAP, I believe. I think our audience probably, has heard about CPAP. CPAP is central positive airway pressure. And this is where you have a device that generates an awful lot of air pressure. It can go ahead and be a mask type device over your nose and mouth. And this device is strapped on to the back of the head extremely tightly so that it doesn't leak air. So that when the device is on, it cycles pressure off and on through the nose, out the mouth, through the nose, out the mouth. And in doing that, it doesn't allow the soft tissues to collapse against. I have used that as well. A little uncomfortable. And, you know, for the most part, sometimes you knock it off at night. It just doesn't give you a good night's sleep. There are patients that are really very dexterous to use this, and they're able to function with it. But most patients feel they're suffocating, even though there's different types of masks that can be used. It's still somewhat of a suffocating type instrument. So let's go on, Mark, with that. We can get into surgery as well, but there are the devices, and, you know, it depends on what our needs are, Mark, and, you know, what our examination is. And remember, Mark, we've always talked about the four pillars. You know, we talk about our history, our examination, and, of course, what diagnostic testing need to be done, and then, of course, you know, what's our decision-making. And each patient is a little different. Some can tolerate the CPAP. There's also a gadget called IAP, which is another way air pressure is cycled in the mouth.
You're breaking up a little.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Beautiful. You know, Mark, you need to look into the nose, into the mouth. You know, do they have deviated septum? Do they have nasal polyps? Do they have large tonsils? So it does depend on the patient and what their anatomy is all about into helping treat this. So it is something that's very individualistic. Laying, again, back to our caller, you know, laying on his side may not be successful in helping to treat the apnea. Do you want to go on again, Mark?
Yeah, so that brings up another interesting point with another gentleman. Kenneth coming in from, you know, Peoria, Arizona, regular thing. He said, are there warning signs of sleep apnea? What are they if
sure.
they are warning signs? Another great question.
A great question. And, you know, it's like anything else. Let's make the list. Can you hear me, sir? Are you
yes.
good?
Yep.
You know, as far as helping our listeners, giving them information, you know, it's a matter, let's prepare them to think about this in their everyday life. You know, as far as some of the red flags, if you will, you know, daytime sleepiness, you know, are they tired during the day? Do they, you know, sit at the desk, kind of wonder about lunchtime, maybe a coffee, and then back to work? That's one of the most important symptoms is the daytime sleepiness. You know, loud snoring, that's another one, which indicates there is some obstruction. And, you know, again, while you're in bed, is your bed partner witnessing any apneas? And apnea is where we actually stop breathing. That's where the term sleep apnea comes from. You know, another warning sign, Mark, awakening with choking or gasping, feeling like you can't breathe, your airway is shutting off. So those are some of the, Mark, more stringent flags that are out there. And we can go on. You know, they have lack of concentration, loss of short-term memory, change in mood, morning headaches, all right, those kind of things. So it does have a symptom complex, but it's just not one symptom. It's usually the package that one would have that would kind of put them on the path to really thinking they have obstructive sleep apnea. Do you think we answered that one, Mark?
I think we did. We got Gail coming in from Clearwater. You know, we haven't heard from her in a while, but she listens
Hi,
to
Gail.
It. Yeah. And basically, she wants to know how long can you live with sleep apnea without any treatment? Another great question.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, Gail, it's like many things in medicine. It depends on degree. You know, how serious is the situation? You know, if it's something mild, you probably could live with it for years. You know, if it's more of a serious obstruction that you're obstructing many times a night, you're obstructing every time you sleep, it can lead to heart attack and very serious ailments. So again, it's a matter of degree, and the worse the symptoms, that's blood pressure, that's obstruction, that's apnea, you know, stopping breathing. Those are the things that overall indicate how serious this is. And, you know, if you have your bed partner keep an eye on you, that's a good idea, getting a feel for this. And, you know, once maybe the bed partner or the patient himself feels that, yeah, I think I've got that. I'm tired during the day. I fall asleep while I'm driving. And they start to go to their professionals. You know, there is something called a sleep study. And a sleep study can be done in the home or, you know, in a medical facility. And that's where you attempt to sleep hooked up to quite a few monitors. And what happens is they actually are able to document the number of times that you have apnea, as well as the number of times your saturation of oxygen falls. And the words that we use here are apnea, which is actually your stopping breathing, and the other word is hypopnea. Hypopnea is where your oxygen levels fall. And these are the things typically that are documented when we do an in-home sleep study or an institutional sleep study. And that's how then we can grade the severity of the apnea by the number of times these events occur. So, Gil, excellent question. You know, it's a matter of getting good information from your professionals,
right,
and then you're correct, then deciding with them, what's my best treatment modality here? So you think we helped, Gil, there, Mark?
I think we did. And, you know, that brings up a question, because we were talking in the pre-chat, you and I, and my wife was telling me that, you know, sometimes they snore a lot. And I would think,
yes,
and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, sleep apnea could cause abnormal heart rhythms, which could lead to something. Am I correct on that?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, with sleep apnea in general,
right,
can lead to a malady called cor pulmonale.
Right.
The words are cor pulmonale. And that has to do with when one is sleeping, having apnea. Apnea is where your heart stops. And when your heart stops, Mark, realize it's a pump. So you have
right,
blood coming into the heart, being pumped out of the heart. If the heart stops, blood continues to come into the heart without being pumped out of the heart. And the heart muscle strengthens, stretches, and the heart becomes larger, and the muscles become weaker. And then once the heart, you know, is full of blood to breathe again, then the muscle has to contract against a larger volume of blood. And that's how people get arrhythmias. They get atrial fibrillation. They also have a heart attack. So your wife, you know, is absolutely correct. And it is something that has many adverse effects if it goes untreated. So I think it's something, you know, again, if we start to see the signs, it's very easy to do a sleep study and then determine, you know, what is this problem and how severe is it? Do I need treatment? So again, let's make our listeners aware, you know, think about this with your daily living and, you know, and with your sleeping partner keeping an eye on you. It's all good information that can help your providers. Mark, why don't you go on to another one?
Yeah, I'll give you another one. Cassandra, first-time listener out of Pontiac, Michigan, says an interesting topic tonight. Hears it with some friends sometimes, and she wanted to throw a question in. She says, does sleep apnea happen every night? And if it does, how do you reverse sleep apnea? Wow, that's a
wow,
loaded question,
yeah,
if you ask me.
Loaded, and that's, she wants the whole kit and caboodle here. you know, I see what you're
Cassandra
saying.
Cassandra,
you know,
in Pontiac, Michigan.
And it's cold in Pontiac, Michigan as well.
Oh, I can
imagine,
yeah.
Cold,
yeah,
here in Pittsburgh. Yeah. You know, as far as typically, if one has sleep apnea, it is something that once they're in that semi-recumbent position, you know, laying in bed, and they fall asleep, usually, Mark, without a doubt, it probably occurs every time. They tend to obstruct. They tend to snore. So that what I would tell her is it's not something that's hit or miss. It's something overall that's pretty consistent and per persistent. You know, some patients will talk to me along the same lines, Mark. Well, when I drink, you know, if I have a couple of beers, a couple of wines, and I go to bed, my wife says I snore. I have apnea. And that may be true. You know, under those special circumstances where one is getting a lot of relaxation in their musculature, that may be the reason they have the apnea, where if they're not doing that, they may have good, strong muscles, good open airways, and they don't obstruct. So, you know, it kind of depends. But if one has sleep apnea, Mark, under regular, normal conditions, Mark, they have it all the time. You know, all right.
Okay. Let me get one more because he's about to get Ralph's out of Pittsburgh. He says, does weight only have to do with sleep apnea? And I'm not a doctor, but I don't think so. I think there's a lot more to it than just the weight. Weight is part of it, and I guess you can elaborate much more than I can on it, but I would think weight is one thing, but there's a lot of components that would lead to sleep apnea, I would guess.
Correct. No, you're guessing correct. A lot of common sense there, very good comments. And, you know, we talk about weight in the terms, you know, of the things that affect our apnea. You know, we talk about BMI, body mass index. And the larger that number, the more obese someone is. Usually the more obese someone is, the larger their BMI, the more serious the sleep apnea. Are you with me? All right, so
yeah.
Obesity is one of the factors. Also, along that same line, Mark, you know, if we have a child or an adult that has something called a craniofacial malformation, if they have poor development of the mouth and throat, if they have large obstructing tonsils and adenoids, if they have an extremely large tongue for a small mouth, this all can lead to obstruction and snoring and, of course, to the apnea. So, you know, there are many factors there. Obesity is one. It's not alone. And, you know, we had some good results, too, with sleep apnea if we're able to get our patients, Mark, to start to lose some of this weight. All right, the more they would lose, a far better way of taking care of the apnea. So it is something, you know, doing a considerable amount of weight loss has a very positive effect on our heart, our lungs, our diaphragm with this apnea concept. You know, going on with regard to, okay, so what? So we have it. You know, so we've diagnosed, our professionals diagnosed me with apnea. They're saying I have moderate to severe. What do I do? And, you know, again, I think that's kind of the gist of the conversation tonight. You know, losing weight definitely helps. Doesn't actually produce a complete result, but does help. There is surgery. And, you know, the surgery is done. It's done today where one goes in and takes the soft tissue from the palate, the tonsillar areas, the sides of the tongue, and can trim that out. By doing that, it opens up the airway, so it decreases resistance and decreases obstruction. You know, we've had patients also, Mark, along surgery lines. They've had a tracheostomy. You know, a tracheostomy is a breathing tube you put in the airway. And then what happens during the day, our patient is able to plug this tube and breathe normally through their mouth as well as talk. And then at night, what they do is unplug that tube and then breathe directly from the atmosphere into the lung and bypass the upper airway. You know, that's another treatment modality. You know, another one that we have talked about it on this show before And that's that new, it's called a hypoglossal nerve implant. It's called the Inspire. That's another surgical intervention that has done quite a bit of good overall and helped an awful lot of people. And we can sure get into that as well. So, Mark, go on. What do you have left, Mark?
Let me get Charlie out of Brookline, Mass. He said, what organs does sleep apnea affect? He's heard one of the organs it affects is the liver, if you have a fatty liver. Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it can. Yeah. And the apnea, you know, again, the apnea has to do with one, stopping breathing. That means you've stopped oxygenating these tissues in our body. And, you know, Mark, this damn sleep apnea, it can cause obesity. You know, it can lead to hypertension. It can lead to heart failure. Mark, it can lead to having a stroke. It can lead to atrial fibrillation. It can bother the kidneys. It can bother the liver. And also, it can give us diabetes type 2. So it is something, and the list goes on here, Mark.
Wow.
That chronic sleep apnea can be a killer. And, you know, we're dealing with patients, now males, 50s to 60s is a sweet spot, and older that tend to suffer from this. So it is something that, you know, as these males get older, their heart can fail. And, you know, other organs of their body as well. So it's something, you know, a word to our listeners is if this sounds like there may be a little bit of truth to these comments, let's get it checked out, Mark. You know, let's give our listeners some help. Let's get a little bit of professional intervention and save some lives. So go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'll take one more, and then we'll start breaking it down where we kind of cultivate this and you know, bring it to the forefront, because this is one heck of a subject. Let me bring in Dalen from Chelmsford, Mass. And basically, as we hit the 500 mark right now, I mean, it is just simply amazing.
Wow.
So the best thing he wants to bring up to the thing is, what's the best position to sleep if you have sleep apnea then? You can't really sleep too much on your, you know, stomach or side or, you know,
sure.
from some of the other listeners, that guy out of Danville. What would be the best way to sleep? I mean, sleeping up? I mean,
sure. Well,
unless you're
right.
A possum,
I mean,
or something.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. It brings up some very interesting conversation. I have several people, Mark, that, you know, when I'm dealing with this apnea, they come in and they sleep in a recliner. All right? They'll be maybe about 30 to 35 degrees, but they sleep in a recliner. That's the way they sleep, that they don't obstruct, and they're able to go ahead and comfortably laying on their back, but not completely reclined, and not have this tissue collapse. So that seems, I'll be honest, that seems to be the real sweet spot, so to speak, for people that don't want to really do a lot invasively, or maybe their health doesn't permit them to have surgery or an implant or something like that. You know, they have these beautiful recliners, and you sure can set them to a variety of degrees of height so that they don't obstruct overall. Does that help a little bit, Mark? You know, I think that's along the lines of that maybe answering the question.
I think it does. I think he clarified his point in Chelmsford real well. So with about 20 minutes left in this show, give or take, as we start to cultivate it to the top of the hour, I guess the biggest key of this thing is, and the question I would have, if somebody doesn't know it and they're just, let's say they're not married, let's say they're solo,
sure.
So they can't even tell they're not breathing, you know, or have sleep apnea symptoms, can the doctor check them out through a physical? How would anybody know if they don't know what's going on, where they can't present that to the doctor, would the doctor be checking for it if he wasn't being told what was going on? I mean, that would be – I'm trying to get clarification for the listeners, because I'm picking and choosing how to come in on this conversation too, because it's so extraordinary, and it's amazing to break this topic down on sleep apnea.
It is, Mark. Thank you for that. You know, I think it's a very interesting question, a very valid question. And, you know, Mark, I don't want to belabor the point. Think about the four pillars. And, you know, when you go into your doc, you have pillar one. They need to listen. You need to be a good historian and tell him what the problems are. And, you know, if you, the patient, are a little suspicious for having a problem, remember some of the signs of sleep apnea that you may have: daytime sleepiness, the snoring you might not be aware of.
Right.
You know, you're awakening with choking or gasping. You may have, you know, lack of concentration. You may have short-term memory loss. You may have irritability with your moods. Again, morning headaches. You may have some weird dreams as well. And those are some of the symptoms that one going solo may be able to recount to their healthcare professional, Mark. You know, the big thing is, do I fall asleep while I'm driving? You know, that's how this all started. These studies with sleep apnea were in the truck driving population. The truck drivers were falling asleep driving, and they started to work back on it and realized they weren't sleeping at night. And that's how this whole science industry of sleep apnea started. So it is something that if one of our listeners is noting that, boy, you know, I drive a school bus, and when I'm coming home at night from the bus, I fall asleep. All right, hey, let's check you for apnea. Let's see what's going on. And, you know, most healthcare providers understand sleep apnea. They know how to order the testing. Remember we talked about the sleep study that you can either have in your home or you can go to the hospital and have it done. That gives our professionals quite a bit of information with regard to your ability to sleep, stop breathing, snoring, you know, quite a variety of good data. And then the other thing is being able to quantify it and say, hey, you know, you stop breathing 20 times an hour. You know, and there's certain criteria here, Mark, that, you know, you go along that'll grade the level of obstruction and the number of apneic spells. So I want our listeners to know there is help out there, but we need to go ahead and get our healthcare professional involved and then get some studies done on our sleeping process. You know, and you
let me bring Steve. Can I bring in Steve from Corvallis Organs question?
Sure. Please.
Yeah, he's an avid listener of this great show, and I know the show, he's up against it. We're really rolling now. 15 minutes left into it. He basically says, you know, he's listening to it live. He says, can I treat sleep apnea myself? I'm hearing I got to go to the doctor. I'm hearing, you know, other things. Is there a way I can kind of moderate it myself by keeping myself active? It's kind of like one of those things, if you've had a heart attack, there's certain criteria you have to follow so you don't have another heart attack. So with sleep apnea, would there be a way I can treat myself, or do I have to go see a doctor? That's a good question, too, but
boy,
I would see a doctor.
You're right. And, you know, is there an easy answer, self-help, that one could do if one wants to be independent and wants to be in control of their health care? And, you know, I would say, well, you know, if you're thinking you have it, you're experiencing a lot of these symptoms. You know, think about getting, I told you about the chair, you know, get one of the chairs that you can go ahead and adjust the height, all right? And, you know, Lazy Boy makes a chair like that. You know what I'm saying, Mark? That
right.
You start sleeping without obstructing by adjusting the back of the chair. And, Mark, it's amazing. These chairs are very comfortable, and I do have quite a few patients that actually sleep in them. But that's something you could do. You know, you could be on a weight loss regime. You know, lose 15 or 20 pounds. See what your BMI is. Normally, a BMI in about the 25 to 28 range is pretty normal overall. Once we get into the 30s and, of course, 40s, their BMI is high. There's obesity. That leads to airway obstruction. So, yeah, losing weight, you know, using the chair as a sleeper, that is definitely something you could handle. And, you know, maybe periodically getting a sleep study to see what your progress is, to see if you're making progress. And, again, just ways to quantify it, Steve. You know, the other thing is your daytime symptoms. Are you falling asleep while you're driving the truck? You know, are you getting that short-term memory loss? You know, what are you feeling? What are you seeing with your life? And trying to be very analytical to go ahead and try to figure it out if you do need to get something. But if you want to try it yourself, you still need to maybe measure it a little bit so you know if you're on the right track. What do you think about that, Mark?
That is a good one, and let me take one more email, and we'll start to get a clear view of wrapping this up because, boy, we can go on and on and on. Joey from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, another avid listener, basically says, guys, great show as always. Keep up the good work. Want to know, are there vitamins that you can take to corral sleep apnea? Wow, I didn't even think of that one.
Yeah, you know what I would say to you, I'm aware of, you know, melatonin, which is in that supplement line, which, you know, helps people sleep. But you know what? As far as saying there is a supplement / vitamin to help sleep apnea, at this point in our research, I'm not aware of it. I haven't seen any articles that'll, you know, stop sleep apnea. And, you know, you have to realize sleep apnea is a mechanical event. You know, it's actually your breathing, having airflow. The airflow is actually being obstructed. That's how simple this is. It's obstruction of airflow. And we want to do everything we can to allow the air to flow without obstruction. I don't think there is a supplement, a vitamin, you know, overall that would help us along those lines. And again, nothing that I'm aware of, but that's not saying there isn't other knowledge and information out there that we can help our listeners. So, Mark, I'm a little on that one. I don't know a whole lot about that part of it. I haven't seen any literature that would provide substantial information that you could take a vitamin and get rid of airway obstruction. So
more or less, I guess the biggest thing here, and it was answered probably when you had Ralph come in from Pittsburgh with the weight loss, I guess the biggest thing is just keep yourself active. If you can lose, I would say, 10% body fat, that would stop a lot of things, heart disease and everything. So because from what I'm gathering from this whole topic, sleep apnea slows down your metabolism. So guys that are heavy have a hard time getting rid of the sleep apnea because they're carrying a lot of weight. Am I correct on that?
You are. Very good thinking. Very good putting it all together. And we know that obesity, you know, is a killer for us, you know, by causing you know, heart problems, blood pressure problems, circulation problems, sleep apnea problems, diabetic problems, Mark. Yeah, if the weight is the killer, I think you're in the right ballpark. 10 to 15% loss would definitely improve one's health. So it's something, you know, again, we need to be fit. The fitter we are, the less of a problem we tend to have. So let's try to stay healthy, keep the weight off. And, you know, like I'm saying, alcohol tends to precipitate apnea as well. So I would be a little cautious in, you know, the amount of beverage one were to drink, Mark. All right? Because they may obstruct even more at that point.
Well, let me I'm trying to get one more in here, and then we'll kind of wrap it up with a segment here. Lance from Pensacola, Florida, another guy that listens to the show, says, I've heard sleep apnea affects your whole body. I mean, you guys are talking about kidney disease, heart disease, and all these other organs. I would imagine it would affect dementia, you know, bone loss.
Sure.
Sexual problems. He's bringing up a whole topic of stuff, Lance, out there in Pensacola.
Sure. And, you know, as far as Lance, a very bright man, probably very well read. And, you know, there is literature now talking about sexual dysfunction in males that have sleep apnea. And, you know, it's one of those things with regard to our organism not being in top shape, it will affect certain types of physiological function. So that he's absolutely right. You know, sexual dysfunction as well as dementia are another group of symptoms secondary to severe sleep apnea.
Wow.
And, you know, Mark, we've had callers that wanted to talk about, you know, the degree of apnea, et cetera. But the worse the apnea, the less oxygenation to our brain, our thyroid, our liver, our kidneys, our sex organs. So that overall, you know, when we have a severe situation, it is a multifactorial problem on our bodies.
Now, let me ask you, what he brought up, and maybe we have, you know, a couple minutes to dissect this. He had brought up, one of the things he brought up was bone loss. Where does bone loss come into this? Does sleep apnea affect your legs and stuff where you can get, you have the knee surgery? Is that what he's talking about? Because he brought up bone loss. I caught that.
I heard what you said. I wasn't sure where he was going with that. But, you know, again, let's say one does have severe apnea, has impaired mobility, there is the potential for resorption of our bones. Because our bones need, you know, exercise. They need the stress of walking, of running. And if one is not able to do that and is weakened with diabetes, liver disease, et cetera, you may get that bone resorption, and that's where the bone loss comes in overall. So, I want to caution our listeners, these are not symptoms typically that you start out with. These symptoms do occur, but they're more down the road with chronic disease that has gone on for years. And, you know, it's something that doesn't really get better unless one puts the time, the effort, and the knowledge into their health care to prevent these chronic diseases from occurring. So we need to be vigilant, Mark. You know, life is beautiful. We have a great organism. But, Mark, we have to protect it. We have to take care of it. It doesn't take care of itself. And when we abuse it or don't nourish it, Mark, it breaks down. And then we're in that reparative phase that we need to actually put more time, energy into our bodies to help prevent the breakdown. And the apnea is one, let's not get a lot of weight on. Let's try to watch our weight. Let's try to exercise. Let's watch the alcohol. Let's get off the drugs, the cigarettes. Let's make sure we do the protein, the veggies, the fruits, all right? Leave the breads alone, you know, and try to take care of this organism. And it will last us a long time, and it'll be in good shape so we can enjoy the end of the runway, if you will.
Yeah, as we sum this up now, less than 5 minutes, let's put a spin on it, and we'll start the preview next week.
Sure. You know, Mark, if I can, I want to thank you for excellent questions tonight.
Wow, it was amazing.
Amazing. Thank you for the call-ins. And, you know, if we talk about, you know, we're trying to bring diseases that we're seeing a lot of interest in. You know, last week we talked about, you know, tubes in the ears.
Yep.
Tonight we're talking about apnea. And these are things where I get really a large number of interest emails that people want to talk about it. And, you know, with the apnea, you know, it's where our respirations are starting and actually stopping multiple times through a sleeping event. So that overall, with that starting and stopping issue, it does affect multiple organs in our body, particularly our heart. And our heart can get damaged from apnea. So we want to prevent that. And that's, you know, again, a major reason to get help, to get diagnosed, so we don't have a heart attack. We don't have the large heart that's weak. So we want to protect our heart. And then, of course, secondarily, Mark, we want to protect our brain. We don't want dementia. We don't want a stroke. We don't want those brain cells dying. They need oxygen. They need the heart to pump oxygen to the brain to go ahead and to nourish them in a state of good health. So apnea, let's try to get rid of it. Let's get it diagnosed. Let's work with our healthcare provider. Let's look at alternative treatments. You know, and wrapping this up, Mark, you know, we have certain appliances. We have CPAP. We have BiPAP. These are the PAPs, the pressure, you know, on the airway that keeps the tissues from collapsing. You know, we have the new device called the Inspire that is an implant on the hypoglossal nerve, which is in the tongue. This nerve has an implant on it. It is then connected to a generator and a battery, typically, you know, in the breast area on the right-hand side. Very similar to, you know, what people have when they have pacemakers.
Wait.
Right.
Wow.
Very similar. Yeah.
You know, we're down to a minute and 20 seconds.
Beautiful.
And we've gone over to the six figure now. So as we wrap this thing up. Let's let everybody know what next week will entitle as we come. And reminder, that week of the 24th, mark your calendars, listeners, archive shows, the talents will be off Christmas week. So there will be no show on the 28th. So mark it down. It'll be archived, everybody having that week off. And then we get into the new year.
Beautiful.
We get back to Saturdays, like he had addressed it earlier, 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 a.m. Pacific, not p.m., a.m. Pacific time, up with the Roosters, so that'll be a good one. And, Doc, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and let everybody know next week's guest.
Surely. GJRMD, 308 at Outlook.com. It's Dr. Greg Roscoe. I'll be glad to entertain your emails as well as answer them also. Next week, we have a plastic reconstructive surgeon on. You know, we've been talking about cancer and cancer treatments. We've talked about breast cancer. This doctor talks about reconstruction. When one has had cancer, what are the methods of reconstruction? You know, looking at either the face, a breast, another part of the body. How does he reconstruct? When does he reconstruct?
Wow.
You know, These are very bright, important questions. Great conversation. Should give our listeners, you know, some good information, just kind of things to think about if, God forbid, they or one of their family members developed something that needed to have surgical intervention if it were a cancer. So that's next week. We may follow that with our breast surgeon, Dr. Kelly Smith, talking about the new diagnostic techniques to determine breast cancer. You know, it was mammograms. There's been a change now. They're talking about CT scanning instead of the mammogram. So I thought that would be a very interesting show to end the year. So, Mark, that's what I have on for the next 2 weeks.
Well, I'll tell you, as we wrap it up, that's Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Each and every Thursday he is here. We'll be going to Saturday starting next year. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, in Los Angeles. We want you to have a blessed weekend. Stay safe. Go Steelers. And catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Thanks for tuning in. We'll touch bases with you next week.
Good night, and thank you.